Live from the garden, this time on A Gardener's Notebook.
Hello and welcome everyone. This is A Gardener's Notebook, live from Los Angeles, California. I'm Douglas E. Welch, your host, and I am truly coming to you live from Los Angeles today. We are actually out in the garden. I decided it was such a lovely day, and even with the little bits of noise which you might hear in the background, most of which are birds and other garden sounds, but you'll also hear some other urban sounds as we do our show today, I wanted to come out and enjoy the sights and sounds of the birds. I have a squirrel here at my feet, morning doves flying in from the trees, and a nice breeze in the air. I want to thank you all for joining me. This is our first show, live show via TalkShoe. That's TalkShoe.com. And with TalkShoe, you can actually join us live, either listening to the stream or actually on the phone with us. Yes, you can call in your own questions, and we would love to talk about your gardens, any questions you might have, and any garden happenings that you might like to tell us about. If you'd like to join us in the live show, there is information on the website, a link, and a little article I wrote about which steps you need to take to join us. You can use your normal telephone or a cell phone, or you can also use a voiceover IP client like the Gizmo Project at gizmoproject.com. And there, in the first few minutes of our show, you'll be hearing what I like to call the silver-sided people carriers, which populate the area. We'll let him fly over for a little bit there. I do live in close proximity to one of the busiest private airports in, busiest public airports in the country. This is not an international airport, but it is the Van Nuys Airport, and it is the home of many, many, many private jets, as well as news channel helicopters and all sorts of activities over there. So we'll be hearing a little bit of that in the background. Now, for more information on A Gardener's Notebook, visit welchwrite.com. That's WelchWrite.com. There you'll find information on A Gardener's Notebook, as well as all the other Welch Wright blogs and podcasts. If you'd like to put a face to my voice today, you can check out our webcam at welchwrite.com/webcam. You'll also see a little piece of the garden behind me here. It's been a busy few months, as it seems it has been for everybody recently. Gardening has been on the back burner for me lately, but last weekend marked a new beginning, at least for a little while. After nearly 11 years, we've started a renovation of the front garden and its geometric beds of azalea and juniper. I spent a good part of last Saturday doing my regularly yearly trim of these beds with the electric hedge trimmers. Now, this isn't exactly the most elegant of tools to be using on these types of plants, but it seems to be the only really manageable method. The first time I did, I tried to use hand pruners and shears. It would have taken days, if not weeks, to get through the whole lot. There are a lot of plants out front. Now, over the years, various azaleas and most of the junipers, in fact, have died out, and they're leaving kind of holes in the geometric regularity. And I pulled out the dead plants, but over the years, I've been thinking that more needed to be done up front. As I was trimming the beds this year, I took a special notice of which ones I might be able to empty and put to better use. Now, if you look at the website, I'll try to get this drawing up and online, and that's a drawing of how the beds are actually arranged. There are three circular beds, two around trees and one circular area around what used to be a tree, and then there are five triangular beds that kind of match together like little puzzle pieces with paths in between them. Now, the smaller of these two triangles were the hardest hit. Obviously, there are fewer plants there. So it seemed the most likely candidates for actually clearing them out, what remained there, and then replanting them with something else. So, while I continued my hedge trimming of the other beds, I asked my son, Joe, he's my 9-year-old son, he's always looking for stuff to do in the garden. So I turned him loose with the biggest set of loppers I could find, and I told him, there's the bed, go at it. And I asked him basically to remove all the plants, just cut them right off around ground level and just take off all the greenery that was left on the plants. I figured it was easier to do that and then come back with a shovel and dig. That way we'd have more space to work and everything, and we'd be able to dig up the root balls more easily. It seemed like the perfect project for Joe, because I've never seen this, honestly, working with him in the garden, but it kept him entertained for at least an hour, all by himself, with very little supervision. And he is getting older, and I do like to have the opportunity to have him work in the garden with me and enjoy it, rather than kind of feeling like it was the slog that it was when I had to help in our vegetable garden when I was growing up. The nice thing is, too, of course, when you do something like that, you really get to see the results right away. Now, my wife, Roseanne, well, she's been very happy with some lavender plants that we planted in the bed that fronts on the street. And they seem to do very well there. They actually get a little more sun there than most of the other areas of the garden. And it looks like perhaps we'll be doing the same thing with these triangular beds, and that is planting them with lavender. Now, the ones we got in the front bed are more upright types. Actually, the whole plant kind of sticks upright, not just the flower stalks. And I am actually looking for something with a little more of a mounding habit. We've seen lavender like this at a place called the Lavender Fields down in San Diego County that we have visited once. It's a beautiful place to visit. And if you want to be simply overpowered with the smell of lavender, visit a lavender farm. It is quite dramatic and amazing. Now, I'll put a link, by the way, to the Lavender Fields in the San Diego County on the website as well. Now, just so happens, too, I got my recent edition of Sunset Magazine, which you may or may not have heard about. It's a home and garden and food magazine, lifestyle magazine that gets published out here in the West Coast. And it has several different subsections for California and the Northern Plains and the Southwest and stuff like that. But it's always been enjoyable. I think I subscribed to that when we first moved here because it was an excellent resource to learn more about California. Now, they just happen to have in their garden section a great article on different types of lavender. And I found a few in there that they describe as more mounding habit. And I think I'm probably going to try those out. I have to look at the scientific names, see if I can find them here in the nurseries around here, but it seems like lavender is a very popular plant out here, and so it shouldn't be too hard to find a nice variety of lavenders to choose from. Now, yesterday we spent a little bit of time in that in one of the triangular beds digging up the remaining root balls, as I said, and starting to turn the soil over to prepare it for new planting. Now, many of these plants are over 10 years old. They've been here at least as long as we've been here, and perhaps we don't know how many years in the 10 to 12 years the previous owners were here that planted these beds. They are not leaving the ground easily. These things are really tight and down into the ground. I've seen some root on these azalea plants that I don't think I've seen on trees. They're just huge and they go very, very deep. They were very well established, which was good to know, and that's probably what's kept them alive as long as they have been, considering the fact that we don't water that front yard that much to try and save on watering cost, and also to make the plants a little more hardy during our drought periods, which it seems like we're entering into again. Now, there's a lot of huffing and puffing out there in the garden, and a couple times I've worried a little bit I'm going to break the handle off my shovel, but basically it's just a process of kicking the shovel underneath root balls, cutting the roots off, and finally it'll let go and release, and we can pull them out. It's going to be a little bit more work there in this first bed that we're doing, and then also a little bit more in the other beds we're going to do, but I think it feels really nice. It feels really nice to be kind of changing something up front. We've been very happy with the garden over the years and have left a lot of it kind of in place. Our previous work in the garden I've considered more of an editorial thing, where we're editing things out of the garden because it was heavily overplanted. But now we're actually starting to kind of put some of our own stamps on the garden after the first 10 years, coming up on 11 years this month, in fact. I finally took the time, as I said, it's been a very busy period for us, but I finally took the time to put together our second composter. And you can see pictures of that on the website. It's a Garden Gourmet plastic upright composter. Very simple, very easy to assemble. I had been planning on doing a video of it to put that in the Gardener's Notebook feed about how it went together and how it worked, Over time, I just never got around to it, And finally, the other day, I was like, if I don't put this together now, it's never going to be put together. So I took the opportunity to just very quickly knock it together and get it out here in the garden. As I said, you can see a picture of it with the existing one on the website. We're very happy with them so far. The first composter has actually started to produce some compost at the bottom, and we're going to take a little bit out of that and actually put on these new beds to work into the soil to kind of help rejuvenate it a little bit and make it a little more fertile. Now, it isn't exactly the right time here in California to be planting any new plants, mainly due to our hot summers that we're having. But for whatever reason, it's been a very cool month so far, especially for June. Some Junes we can be very hot, I should say, and other Junes we get what's called a June gloom. And this is where the marine layer, the fog layer from the oceans, pushes all the way inland. And sometimes here in the valley won't burn off for the entire day. It's almost like a gray winter's day, except it stays, you know, a nice temperature. We've had a few days like that, not a whole lot, but overall the temperatures have been very moderate. So it's our hope that we can get these lavender plants in, kind of baby them through the hot part of the year right now. But the bed is actually in an exposed area that we walk by every day. It's right next to the driveway. And so it's a little more in our face and will give us a little more reminders of time to go out, water it, and to keep it moist over the hottest parts of the year. Of course, lavender as it is loves hot weather, hot, dry weather. In fact, if you water it too much, I've been told by the folks down at the lavender fields, actually, that if you water too much, it will actually lose its scent. It collects up too much water in the stems and dilutes the essential oils, which give it its fragrance. Now, we still have a little bit of cleanup out front. Trimming back the plants. I had missed my trim last year on these plants, and so they were very bushy this year. The reason that I missed it, quote-unquote, was once the azaleas bloom, you want to trim them sort of immediately after they bloom, because soon after that, they actually set the buds for the next year. So if you trim too late in the season, you can actually cut off all your buds for the next year and you won't get any flowers. And I didn't want to do that. So I let it go for a year. It made a little more work this year, but really didn't seem to do them much harm. Sometimes as the plants get older, you can start to get very, very thick limbs in the shrubs, which can be hard to cut with a hedge trimmer, and you'll have to go back with the loppers and take those off. And that's one of the hazards of letting them go over time like this. But this year it didn't seem to work out too bad. Now what it did do, of course, is the paths were kind of being overgrown up front. And now that I've got the main bulk of the trimming done, I can see now where I missed little small stems coming out from the bottom of the plant. Usually down, they were down in the leaflet and you really couldn't notice them. With those, I just go back very quickly and either hit them with hand pruners or take the hedge trimmer out real quick and zip them off just to neaten things up a bit. The other nice thing, of course, as I mentioned, the leaf litter, this was an opportunity for us to gather up the leaf litter as well along with the trimming, so kind of killed two birds with one stone. Now that the beds are finished, you know, we can basically go back and do a little fine-tuning and things will just look even better as we go on. This is A Gardener's Notebook Live from Los Angeles, California. I'm Douglas E. Welch. For more information on A Gardener's Notebook, visit welchwrite.com. That's WELCHWRITE.com. There you'll find links on things that I'm doing in the garden, links to other interesting information, and more. We'll take a short pause here while our helicopter flies nearby. I hope everyone can hear me well. It's a little hard to know exactly how the audio is coming through, but if anyone is in the chat room or listening to the stream, drop me a line. You can actually email me at agn@welchwrite.com. Again, that's WELCHWRITE.com. Now, the last several months have found me working in my spare moments on one of my favorite projects here in the garden, and it's only peripherally gardening related, but I consider it a major part of any garden that I would create, and that is attracting wildlife to my garden. In this case, attracting birds. Now, I also attract squirrels. In fact, as I'm sitting here recording, less than about 5 feet away from me is a squirrel cleaning up the dropped seeds underneath the bird feeder. And hopefully in the background, you can hear some of our birds as they come in to feed and use the bird bath and just kind of generally hang out in the garden. They really seem to like it here. Now, unlike some gardeners, of course, that have to deal with really bad wildlife like deer and gophers and groundhogs and everything like that, I mean, the most destructive animal I have in my garden here is my rather aggressive urban squirrels. But I haven't actually noticed much damage that they do now, especially that I've got a system that keeps them out of my bird feeders. So I've been taking the time to fill the bird feeders more often, try to keep them filled up, and just attract a few more birds to my garden. My home office here overlooks the back garden, overlooks the bird feeders, and there is just something very special about being able to look out and engaging a little bit in nature, maybe picking up the binoculars and seeing what that interesting bird might be, and just taking a few moments for yourself during your busy work day, especially when you spend so much time at the computer like I do myself. Now, my main feeder, it's filled with a pretty much traditional bird seed of millet, other grains, and sunflower seeds. And they've always been very good at attracting the usual species. I get a variety of house finches, a variety of sparrows, mourning doves. A few days ago, though, I added a new feeder to the mix, and it's serving up thistle seed, and sometimes this is also called Niger seed. Now, these small black seeds are more attractive to the smaller songbird species, such as warblers and goldfinches, which we do have here in the area, although other birds will sometimes eat it as well. The finches seem to prefer the millet and the sunflower seeds, but they will. I do see them on the other feeder occasionally. Now, sure enough, I was very happy that after only about 2 days, I spotted my first lesser goldfinch. And she, I believe, if my bird identification book has not led me astray, she's been a regular visitor here. Now, these smaller birds are a little bit skittish around the aggressive finches and sparrows, but once at the feeder, they tend to stay for quite a while. Now, I'm hoping that this new type of seed continues to attract different species. Frankly, I just love being able to sit here in the office and distract myself, as I was saying earlier, and I love seeing new birds and adding new birds to my life list and generally engaging with the outdoors, even if I am stuck inside. Now, over the years, I really haven't had much success attracting hummingbirds to the garden. I do see them sometimes feeding on the various flowers in the garden, and that's very nice. But as far as attracting them to a feeder, I don't know if it's placement or whatever, but it's been a little sparse. As it was, though, I had a little bit of hummingbird food that someone had given me, and I had an old feeder, and I cleaned it out, and I hung it up here on the existing feeder just to see if anyone would happen by. Sure enough, for whatever reason, I saw a hummingbird there the other day, and it was a little timid. It was the hummingbird feeder was right in amongst the other feeders, and I said the finches and the sparrows can get a bit aggressive. So the hummingbird seemed to come in and be very tentative about feeding there. So once I'd seen that I actually had a... pardon me. So once I'd seen that I actually had hummingbirds here in the garden, I moved the feeder over a little bit to a little quieter spot, a little closer to my window, actually, which is nicer because they are so small and very hard to identify unless you get quite a bit of time and quite close to them. Sure enough, in just about an hour, the hummer seemed to be the same one that I had seen earlier, had found the new location, and now several times a day I notice one or two hummingbirds come in and feeding at that feeder. So that's really nice. I'll try to keep that feeder filled now and see if we can attract a few more. The one I think I saw was what's known as an Allen's hummingbird, at least as far as I could tell. It looks like a somewhat immature immature bird, so it's even more difficult to tell than usual. But from its orange coloration, I do think it was an Allen's. Now, one of the issues you have with a hummingbird feeder, though, is you must have an ant moat. And I know that sounds a little silly, but an ant moat is basically a cup which can be filled with water from which the feeder hangs. What this prevents is the ants from coming down the hanging wire or the hanging part of the feeder and down and getting the sugar syrup which is in the hummingbird feeders. As you might imagine, they love that stuff and they will just totally take over a feeder and in some cases empty it out entirely before you even notice what's going on. So an ant moat is always a great idea. You can pick it up at most any place that they sell hummingbird feeders or bird feeders of any type. I've seen them at my local Wild Birds Unlimited store. You can probably find them a little cheaper elsewhere. But I hope you enjoyed hearing about my birds. I hope you attract birds to your garden too. I think they're one of the easiest pieces of easiest types of wildlife to deal with, and one of the prettiest to have in your garden. I actually hear at my feeders will sometimes have hawks that come in from the nearby wildlife reserve, and on occasion they will take a bird from the area here. I consider that kind of a Disney-esque circle of life type of thing, as long as it doesn't the predation doesn't get extreme. Hawks are a part of our natural environment here, our red-tailed hawks, and what I often get here are immature red tails who are basically learning to hunt for the first time and finding an easy place to do it here at my feeders. I haven't seen one in several months though, not since early in the spring, but I do get them here on occasion. I've seen red tails, and I've actually had a merlin, or what's called a sparrowhawk, at one time in the garden as well. Now, if you subscribe to A Gardener's Notebook website, which I highly recommend, the podcast I only do every two weeks to every month, but in between those times, I'm actually posting a large variety of information on the website, on the blog itself, and I like to post things that interest me and catch my eye, things that my friends are doing, interesting news stories, interesting garden tidbits that I've picked up elsewhere. Now, over the last several weeks, two of my friends have posted some really interesting information on their sites. Now, first off, Carrie Dearborn, who you've heard here on A Gardener's Notebook before, she has started a backyard biodiversity project. She is an amateur naturalist and deals a lot with biodiversity and ecological concerns, naturalist concerns. She's an educator as well. And she decided that it was time, rather than take some grand project on, it was time to investigate the biodiversity of her own backyard. And that is exactly what she's doing. She's applying the techniques of a professional naturalist, a professional scientist, to basically break her property down into sections and investigate the flora and fauna in each section, and then cataloging it on her blog. She's posted, I think 3 to 4 posts at this point, and frankly, I am just deeply engaged. I find it so neat what she finds in some of the most inhospitable areas of her garden. She started with what she thought would be the least diverse area of her entire property, which was the driveway. She was amazed in what she found there. Beyond the usual birds and other animals that come to her garden, she found several varieties of insects that she had never seen before. She found a wide variety of plants, including some natives. And I highly recommend that you head over to her website and give it a read and kind of take some time to investigate her post on this biodiversity project. I think you'll find them extremely interesting. And if you're like me, you might even be tempted to do it yourself. Now, you can find her blog and podcast over at animalbites.com. And that's animal, A-N-I-M-A-L, bites, B-Y-T-E-S.net. And I may have said it incorrectly a little earlier, but animalbites.net. Highly recommend that you subscribe to that. It's a great blog. It's a great podcast. And you'll learn some amazing stuff about the wildlife that frequents your garden and your garden itself. Now next, my fellow Friends in Tech member, Andy Helsby, over at absablogandlutely.net, has started a new blog on square foot gardening. He has given great details on each step of the process. He's using the square foot gardening book that's been very popular over the last few years, and he's giving us costs for materials he had to substitute, what he's planted in each area, and also just the general status of his square foot garden. I will put a link to both Animal Bites and Absablog and Lutely on the website, so it might be a little bit easier to check them out. You'll be able to go there and simply type in, click on the link instead of having to type in the long names. Well, that's all for this Gardener's Notebook today, live from the garden. I'd love to hear what's going on in your garden. Send your questions and comments to agn@welchwright.com. Post them as comments on the website at welchwright.com/AGN. And again, Welchrite is welchrite.com/AGN. Now, you can also call our listener line at 818-804-5049 and leave a message there. Now, if you do that, you might just end up on the podcast. Until next time, I'm Douglas E. Welch. Thank you for joining me for this edition of A Gardener's Notebook, A Gardener's Notebook live from the garden. We hope you've had a great time listening to us today. And until next time, keep digging.
The theme music for A Gardener's Notebook is The One by The Woodshedders, a.k.a. The Hot Club of West Virginia, courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network. Music.podshow.com. To your house is an effortless one. That spring in my stride, sure get the job done. Up and out now, like a bird, and just like the sun. You love me. Are you looking for your first house, or even your second? Is your search for a mortgage driving you crazy with talk of APR, ARMs, title, points, and more? Want to make sure you get the best possible loan? Then check out Mortgages Made Simple with Rick Gunzik, an experienced loan professional who gives you the information you need. Each week, he discusses important loan topics, defines and explains confusing terms, and answers your questions. Visit PacificResidential.com/show to listen and subscribe today. The money you save will be your own. Again, PacificResidential.com/show.